Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 7, Episode 55. And we'll have Paul Denner Jr. join us today to break down the Bengals a little bit later in the show. Dave, here we are. It's Week 14, and hopefully Steelers and Steeler fans aren't having a Ryan Mallett feeling. Not that the Bengals are going to be bringing their backup quarterback, but the Steelers are going on the road in a game that they're supposed to win again, but they've had trouble. You know, I know they've won in Cincinnati a lot, but they have struggled with divisional opponents, the Bengals and the Ravens, of late. Ben has not played his best football against those two teams. We know Ben struggles on the road. This is a game where you look at it, and on paper, you know, if it weren't a divisional game and everything were the same, you'd say, okay, the Steelers are going to go win this just like they won in Indy or in Buffalo. But I don't think this one's going to be a piece of cake.
Yeah, I don't either. Episode 55 today. Is that some sort of sign, Vontaze Burfict's number? Look, this is – say what you will about the way the Bengals – you know, looking at the Bengals' record and you know, as we'll talk to Paul a little bit later, he doesn't seem to think A.J. Green will play, but, you know, that's yet to be determined so far. Obviously, a big hit, in my opinion, them not having Giovanni Bernard, lost him several weeks ago to an injury. All that said, this, I mean, still Bengals Steelers, and it's going to be in Cincinnati where Roethlisberger has had some problems this year. And let's face it, that, you know, that secondary of the Bengals is one I think you still need to be worried about. I think they got some great safeties over there. Of course, Drake Kirkpatrick on one side and Adam Jones on the other side. So what a statement it would be if the Steelers went in there and played like we think they can play, right?
Yeah, I think it would be a big statement. And we keep talking about over this four-game win streak, the quality of opponents, and it's a fair discussion, but I'll just keep coming back to schedule sequencing. The Steelers have played a pretty hard schedule this year. Teams like the Dolphins that were supposed to be kind of the easy wins haven't been. They've gotten some breaks. They didn't have to face Andrew Luck, of course. And if they get by this game, they get to play the last two games at home. And we've made, you know, the drama will be made about this game with the Ravens next week, but they got to take care of business in this one. And it would – I don't want to say it'll make the Bengals season, because making the playoffs would make the Bengals season. That's not going to happen. But it's a game that you certainly expect them to be ready for.
You know, we always try to – late in the season, we look at some of these games, David, and we say the must win, you know, putting a number on the must win factor of it. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 absolutely being a must win, what number do you put on this game?
Yeah, I've been rolling around the 7-8 number kind of consistently the past few weeks. And the reality is this one, if you get into the details of what they need to do, if you say, okay, they lose this one and win the next two, they're going to win the North. So it's not that important. So I'd put it at a 6. Having said that, you know, it feels like a 10.
Yeah. It does feel like, you know, you don't want them to slip up. But I guess if there was a game, you know, I guess outside, I mean, look, I mean, nobody would expect them to lose to the Browns to end the season here. So if you had to pick one of the next two to lose, I think it would be this one, because you obviously want to beat Baltimore next week or on Christmas there and potentially still win that division. I think 10-6 or 10-6 will still get it done, you know, with the division, obviously. And look, even 10-6, depending on what the Broncos do and some of these other teams right now hanging around in that wild card picture, You know, at worst, it should be able to get you a wild card. So, yeah, I would put it about a 6 or 7. And obviously, if they did lose this one, you'd have to put 10s on the final two games.
Yeah, right. And the thing is, they've won 4 in a row, and that allows them, you know, this little bit of room. But, you know, we know what happened down in Baltimore last year on the road. So hopefully week 16 last year isn't a replay week 15 this year. So, Dave, in terms of the injury report, it just came out as we do this on Friday that Hargrave and Finney haven't officially been cleared out of concussion protocol, but they have practiced the last 3 days. So I don't know what they're waiting for in terms of the final clearance. But obviously, when you get that second practice, when you're able to do that, that's generally the sign. The last step is full physical exertion and make sure you react. The reaction's positive, that you don't have symptoms flare up or recur, and that hasn't happened. So I'm not worried about those two guys. It looks pretty straightforward again in the injury report. They're going to be three guys down, and it'll be, again, D'Angelo Williams and DHB, and then Shamarco Thomas. And so the Steelers are coming into this, you know, into these last couple of weeks relatively healthy, all things considered.
Yeah, and Marcus Gilbert, after being limited with an ankle on Wednesday, returned to practice fully on Thursday. That's a good sign there. Ramon Foster has practiced fully both days this week, so you would expect him back at left guard this week. Marquise Pouncey and Ben Roethlisberger, both non-injury related, practice fully. And, you know, I think really the only real disappointing thing on the injury report was D'Angelo Williams practiced fully on Wednesday and was not able to practice on Thursday. So on the surface, and it's just speculation on my part, that his knee probably didn't respond very well to that full practice. So expect him to be down once again. You know, and as you mentioned, Shamarco and DHB down as well. You know, should be some interesting decisions possibly with the inactive list this week. I mean, we think Mettenberger will be one of those inactives again. Have to think Mahalik will be one of those inactives. And then, you know, Grimble, and, you know, then I guess you decide, do you want DeMarcus Ayers or Daryl Richardson to get a helmet, right?
Right, and that will be an interesting thing. And again, we'll see what happens in the return game between, you know, Justin Gilbert doesn't appear to be part of it. I mean, it's Fitz Toussaint and Sammy Coates, and will Ayers be involved? Would they, you know, let him return punts? I mean, we're gonna have this conversation again next year about Antonio Brown and returning punts, and people might as well get used to it. Antonio Brown's returning punts, period. So he's going to be the guy, and I don't have any problem with it. And fortunately, knock on wood, I mean, let's hope he doesn't get hurt the rest of the season. But my guess would be Richardson's more valuable in special teams currently. So he gets the helmet. But if not, then maybe you expect the Steelers to try and get some plays in there for DeMarcus Ayers.
Boy, I mean, if you got him any snaps, you would think they'd be few and far between, right? I mean,
five, right?
Very, very few and far between. How surprised would you be if Mike Tomlin threw him back there on a kickoff return?
I'd be surprised.
I would, too. It just doesn't fit Tomlin's MO to put a youngster back. I don't know. You know, maybe if you're up, this would be a good problem to have. Maybe up 31-3 and you score, or 31-3 and the Bengals score and they have to kick off or something like that. I don't know. But I would be shocked. And I think Todd Haley really put it best when he talked to the media on Thursday, saying, you know, the challenge right now is him just getting himself a hat right now on game days. So I would tend to lean toward Daryl Richardson getting the helmet over Ayers, and, you know, we'll of course you'll have the rest of the weekend to kind of to pontificate, if you will, based on what finally happens on this injury report and all, as far as who the 7 inactives will be. But as usual, I think you can nail them down to about 6 of the 7.
Right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the situation in terms of how to attack this Bengals team, and just because of all the factors, just on the Steelers side of things, on the road, divisional game. Cincinnati, the way they play defense in terms of playing cover two against Ben, the interceptions that he's thrown against them. Basically, I think he's thrown an interception in virtually every game he's played them over the past couple of years. You have to think, right, that this is a Le'Veon Bell show.
Yeah, I mean, look, you go with that hot hand right now, and that hand's been hot for several weeks now, and I think you can, and not only by hot hand on the ground, out of the backfield as a receiver, obviously. Will they come out though, and kind of, you know, will, I guess the question is will the Bengals think that's going to be the case, and much like the Bills kind of tried to do, you know, kind of stack the box there, and will the Steelers counter that at least initially by coming out and throwing the ball? What did they throw the ball, like 13 out of the first 16 times or something against the Bills before settling into the run? I doubt it'll be that lopsided, but I think you just can't purposely try to run against a stacked box
and they tried that against Baltimore, and hopefully they learned their lesson. I mean, you can't look, they want to be balanced. That's Mike's big thing. His MO is to have a balanced offense so they can do different things. And obviously you can run play action. And the fact of the matter is, if they can get a stacked box, that's the look that Ben wants to throw against. So hopefully that's how they do it. They do it with play action after being effective in the run game and are able to take their shots with, you know, play action to Eli Rogers over the middle, or, you know, whatever it may be. I would think the Steelers would come out, you know, looking to run the ball. And then if you're the Bengals, the question is, you know, Burfict's going to be attacking the line of scrimmage the whole game. And how much are they willing to get out of that cover two look, I guess is the question.
Well, you know, if they want to get in that cover two look, perfect time to get another great game out of Ladarius Green, right? I mean, we've seen Heath Miller have some just last year, right? Against the Bengals in both games. So if he can do it, you would think Ladarius Green would be able to get some tasty matchups in this one as well too. I'm really looking for a strong game out of Green. What is a good game for Antonio Brown nowadays? Anything more than 100 yards? I mean, I think if the Bengals limit him. If you're the Bengals, and I told you right now, Antonio Brown has 7 catches for 87 yards and 1 touchdown. Do you run with that right now?
Well, maybe not if I'm the Bengals. If I'm the Steelers, I do. I mean, the touchdown makes the difference. But I think those are the numbers we should expect from Antonio Brown. 680 and a touchdown every other game.
What if I took the touchdown away and say, David, you're the Bengals. You can have that right now. No touchdown and 80-something yards.
Yeah, I think they'd take it just like the Steelers would take it if A.J. Green were playing. Those are, you know, if you keep the touchdown, if you don't give them the touchdown and you hold them under 100 yards, those are good days against, you know, the best receivers in the league.
And, you know, we'll see.
And if the Steelers, I'm not necessarily turning it down either, by the way, because 87 yards, if you figure Le'Veon Bell's getting 150 from the line of scrimmage in whatever facet he gets them, you know, that's 230 from your, you know, 230 from your two big guys. So, you get 100 elsewhere, you know, maybe that's enough. But I wouldn't necessarily turn down, you know, 685 or whatever it is.
And of course, you have to quantify those catches a little bit too, because you could catch a 10-yard pass on 3rd and 11, and you take that all day long, right? I mean, because your defense gets off the field. So yeah, it's kind of probably wrong to quantify it that way. Better to quantify it where those catches come. And Brown, obviously a good job of moving the chains. What about Kobe Hamilton? Yeah, I wrote about him after that Bills game, David. He's not lighting it up on the stat sheet, but his 1 or 2 catches a game sure seem to come at the right time, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of first downs. You know, he got that one in the only pass I think they threw in the third quarter. He converts that third down. There was a game at home earlier in the season where I think he had 2 catches and a couple big third down conversions. So, I'm amazed Kobe Hamilton's on the field, and that's not necessarily designed to be a knock on Kobe Hamilton. I'm just, you know, if you had told me in week 15, Kobe Hamilton's one of your starting receivers, I'd say, how the hell did that happen? I mean, what plague hit the Steeler receiving core? And, you know, okay, good for him.
Best blocking wide receiver on the team with DHB sideline.
Only blocking wide receiver.
poor Eli. He gives some effort on some plays, but he just that's just not his forte, if you will.
Okay, so that's that side. If you're the Bengals, I think you probably, you know, play your cover two, but, you know, you're focused on the run early and see how things go. I think we know how they're going to play defense because that's how they play defense. So then the other side is, you know, what do the Bengals bring offensively to the table here? And the answer is Jeremy Hill, whatever you think of him. I actually am a fan of Rex Buckhead. I have been since his days back at Nebraska, right? I always felt like he ran hard, and he's a multidimensional guy. And he has actually carried the load a little bit with Geo out. He's actually done a decent job. The offensive line not living up to expectations this year. That's been a part of their problem. And then we always had the Andy Dalton question, Dave, about, you know, where does Andy Dalton fit in the quarterback list of the NFL? Let me ask you this question, because I don't know that we've had this conversation. Who would you rather have, Andy Dalton or Joe Flacco?
Oh, Flacco.
I think I might take Dalton. I'm just thinking about it because I had never thought about it before. But
Let's throw that one out to the listeners to respond on either Twitter or email, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Look, Flacco has had his issues, yes, but I think I like his deep ball better, even though he hasn't been great at it this year. And I just think his game management's a little bit better on top of it. I would choose Flacco, but maybe some listeners would disagree and agree with you and take Dalton.
So, you know, you're going to do – I think you can do the same thing here. I don't know that the Steelers need to be – I like their aggressive nature, and I think that's their best. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they dialed it back a little bit this week, and you know, brought four much of the time. The thing I'll be surprised if Dupree and Harrison play every snap this week, and it's more because holding the other team to 50 offensive snaps is difficult to do. First of all, and the Steelers dominated time of possession last week, so. I would expect that to some degree you'll see the other guys a little bit more, you know, a series here, a series there. That would be number one. And having Hargrave back gives them a lot more flexibility on the D line. So I'll be curious to see. I don't think we'll see much of Big Dan. I'm curious to see how much we'll see of LT Walton. Did his play last week earn him playing time? To get snaps,
maybe a handful, right? I mean, just barely a handful. I would like to see Stephon Tuitt get a breather every now and again, right? I mean, can we continue to expect him to play the high amount of snaps? I suppose so, but remember Cameron Hayward talking about that at the end of last season. I would, if you find a chance to get him off the field, you should get him off the field. Even if it's a play or two, I think. Yeah, how much will that add up in the long run? LT Walton, I don't think there's enough section of tape there to really draw any hard conclusions on him right now. I'd like to see more of it, obviously, and maybe we will. But I think you'll see just the heavy rotation of Hargrave, Matthews, Stephon Tuitt, and... maybe four or five snaps from LT Walton at the most, barring injury, of course.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Keith Butler was right up front and honest about James Harrison and Bud Dupree, you know, during his press conference. You know, those are the best guys out there. And it wasn't a hot day in Buffalo where they have to worry about those kind of conditions on top of it. So, you know, that's why they played as they played good early, and that's why they stayed on the field. So, Maybe we'll see a repeat of that. Chicklow, and Chicklow was one or two snaps that he had. One of those was actually a nice. Well, he got some.
He hit the quarterback, right?
Yeah, he got some pressure from behind on that play that resulted in the Clay touchdown, if memory serves me, as well. So, if you want to get anybody off the field, it's Harrison, I would think, because Butt obviously missed a lot of time. He should be able to absorb a lot of those snaps right now, and he needs them too, if you ask me. I want to see this offense run that power again. I had so much fun going through that tape of the Bills game because it's not often that we get to see the see the Steelers offense run that counter not only to the left but the right as well. And obviously, I don't think B.J. Finney's going to be in there this week, and Ramon Foster's not a guy that you tend to pull more than maybe once or twice a game to the right side. But if you go back a couple of games ago against the Bengals, remember at the end they just ran that Georgia counter just over and over and over again, and will they run it as much as they did against the Bills? Probably not, but boy, that sure was enjoyable to watch.
Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows, and if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxham from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online, www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me give you a couple stats real quick about the Bengals run defense directionally. Left guard, 40 plays run to left guard, 45 average gain, 4.58 yards per carry, good for 25th rank in the NFL. Plays right up the middle, 60 of them, average gain, 4.22 yards, good for 21st rank in the NFL. Right guard, this will probably astound you, being as how really this is where Geno Atkins' territory right here. 55 plays to right guard, 6.05 yards per carry, last in the NFL when it comes to there. So yeah, heavy dose of Bell pretty much wherever you want to place him.
And Dave, Adam Schefter talking about Bell, potentially being franchised. Is that news? Not really, right?
No, not really. It's news when it comes out of major media mouth such as Adam Schefter. That's why we're forced to pass it along on the site. Specifically, this is what Adam Schefter says. Here's what Pittsburgh's game plan likely will be, according to sources around the league. The Steelers are expected to use the $12.377 million franchise tag on Bell, restricting his ability to go to another team while trying to hammer out a long-term extension in the offseason. Schefter went on to say this would provide the Steelers with a protection they would need for a player who is good as any in the game. Not earth-shattering by any stretch of the imagination, because Bell is set to become an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. The question becomes, as soon as they do put that franchise, or if they do put that franchise tag on him, what's a long-term deal going to look like? A lot of people really going after this in the comments today, and you're talking about a situation that's months away here. If you do put a tag on him, I say this with every tag player, you're probably going to have to pay him an average yearly value of right around what the tag amount is, and the cash flow is going to be what you would expect it would be on a normal contract. The only question becomes exactly what is that cash flow for the first 3 years? How much guaranteed money are you talking about? What kind of second year option bonus are you going to have in that? But I mean, this is pretty cut and dry. I mean, yeah, we had some fun a couple of weeks ago talking about would you entertain letting Bell walk, yada, yada. I mean, that's obviously not going to happen. They're going to put, if they can't work out a long-term deal with him prior to the start of the new league year, and quite honestly, I would be surprised if that happens with Bell. I think it's in Bell's best interest to force the tag to be put on him. We'll see, but not huge breaking news, but news coming, considering the source, it's going to generate a lot of discussion between now and the end of the regular season there.
Okay, Dave, should we get to our guest Paul Detter Jr.?
Sure. Let's dial him up.
Okay, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And every Wednesday, we generally like to get a beat writer for the opposing team. Schedules didn't work out perfectly, so we're doing it today, Friday, as the Steelers and Bengals meet for the second time this year. We're pleased to be joined again by Paul Detter Jr. of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. You can follow him on Twitter at his name, at Paul Detter, D-E-H-N-E-R-J-R. Paul, as always, thanks for being with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
No problem, guys.
Paul, when we look at the season and where the Bengals are today, the coming into the season, the topic was, okay, lots of losses in free agency. How are they replaced? How are they going to step up? The second factor, obviously, is the injuries they've dealt with. Eifert in the first matchup wasn't available. Obviously, perfect, not either. We're going to this matchup. Looks like maybe A.J. Green's not going to be available. Gio Bernard's on the injured reserve. All teams deal with this. Why are the Bengals, 5-7-1 at this point in the season?
Boy, there's a lot of people in this town and inside Paul Brown Stadium's front office is asking that question. What's happened is interesting. A lot of players got old real fast that I don't think anybody really expected to see happen this year. They just seen a lot of aging happening, and they haven't really had the players come up from recent drafts to take the torch and to fill in. One thing that I talked about a lot this week that I think the Steelers are really enjoying right now is watching this influx of young talent,
yep,
particularly on their defense in recent drafts, step up and really help the team ascend. Well, the Bengals have done that in recent years. They've had draft after draft that has produced, and this young talent has just stepped in, except these last three drafts have not produced like the previous three to four, and it finally caught up to them this year when they lost so many of those guys in free agency. They just didn't get the production stepping into those roles that they hoped to get.
There's always the question about Marvin Lewis. It comes up constantly. The question of, would they pay two coaches? I look at Marvin Lewis, and it's kind of – I guess I have a different view than some people that the guy has done enough over his tenure that because of the free agency losses, because of the injuries, there's no way I would change coaches this offseason. I'm sure that's a heavy topic of conversation. What are your thoughts about what they should do, and then what are your thoughts about what they will do?
It is a heavy topic of conversation. I think it has been probably for the past 4 years or so. The interesting thing is what they will do is Marvin Lewis is going to be the coach next year. We can get that out of the way. Mike Brown is believes in the same philosophy that the Steelers ownership does, and that's in continuity and not having knee-jerk reactions after one season that goes the wrong way. He believes in everything that was trending during five consecutive playoff runs and a couple of North titles. So that said, you also have to look at the possibility, which is what started to weigh in now, that Marvin Lewis chooses to walk away. And he has talked about an expiration date, whether it be with the Hugh Jackson situation last year. There was a plan offered up to Hugh about being a coach in waiting when Marvin would choose to walk away in a couple of years. We've heard little tidbits here and there that would make you think, okay, there does seem to be an expiration date that Marvin is setting on himself. He says he's coming back. He told us he's coming back if asked to come back. And we know that Mike is going to ask him to come back. So that's where that stands right now. And I would be on the same page as that. I would, I would say you got to give him a chance to come back and prove that this year was just the NFL doing what it occasionally does to teams and not some sort of trend down the back end of the bell curve.
Paul, A.J. Green limited in his first 2 days back at practice after suffering that hamstring injury several weeks ago. What's the general consensus? Is he going to go this week, or will a lot depend on what happens today during practice?
Yeah, I don't think there's any way he plays. He's practiced, but he's been limited. He hasn't really done much of anything. I mean, this is the first time he's even touched the practice field. He's just been working out on the side. You know, he's not going to come back if he thinks there's a chance of hurting it further. If he played, he wouldn't be out there at 100%. I just don't think that it's going to happen. The official injury report has not been put out yet, but I'd expect him to be doubtful or maybe questionable if lucky, but I don't expect him to play.
Andy Dalton already sacked, I think, 36 times so far this season behind an offensive line that I've generally regarded as, you know, being fairly competent and decent at protecting the quarterback. What have you seen that's led to Dalton being on his back so many times?
Yeah, you weren't the only one that thought they were competent and decent entering the season. I mean, it's been the biggest shocker, really, of this year offensively has been such a significant regression and struggle with the offensive line. I mean, you can point to the obvious. The obvious is they had a major failed experiment at right tackle, letting Andre Smith go and bringing in 2015 first-round pick Cedric Obwehi. I mean, they let Andre Smith go because they said, we have to find a place for Cedric Obwehi to start. He's too good. They used words about, like, generational tackles for them. They thought he was going to be great. But he came in and was just awful. I mean, he was not even arguably. He was the worst tackle in the NFL when he was in there, particularly in pass protection. They eventually moved to a platoon with Eric Winston, and just 2 weeks ago kicked Cedric Obwehi out of the platoon and moved the 2015 second-round pick Jake Fisher in to give him a chance to get some snaps and see if he could possibly do something. Moved Cedric Obwehi over as Andrew Whitworth's backup at left tackle, said learn left tackle, be over there. That is the biggest issue. That's where most of it stems from, because Kevin Zeitler, playing next to that right tackle position, had a lot of trouble early in the year finding any sort of consistency. Russell Vodine at center has played a little bit better. The one consistency has been Andrew Whitworth, amazingly, who is just gets older and older and continues to expand his lead on the next oldest starting tackle in football, and has been one of the best in football. So they have that, but the rest of the line just hasn't been able to offer near as much consistency as they'd like.
Pittsburgh folks are obviously interested to see how Tyler Boyd has done this year. I don't know that I liked the two receivers who left. I'm a bit surprised the drop-off has been as big as it's been. What's been the production from the other receivers? You know, obviously A.J. Green's an all-world talent, but the rest of the guys, how would you – you know, you talked about guys not stepping up. Is Tyler Boyd one of those guys who hasn't stepped up as much as you would have expected?
No, quite the opposite, actually. I will say the one silver lining that's come out of a pretty dark cloud season for this team has been the rise of late of these three rookie receivers. I mean, it took a little bit of time. It took about a half a season to really find the right combination. Marvin Lewis even said to us a couple weeks ago, I wish we could go back and reset the season with this receiver position, because the growth that they've seen so quickly by guys once they started getting in there. Tyler Boyd being the front runner of that. It's him, Alex Erickson, who's an undrafted rookie, and Cody Core, who's a sixth-round pick, have really contributed right off, you know, right as soon as they started to get in. Boyd, about mid-season, was playing okay, but they were looking for another level, and I kind of wrote a story that they showed him a lot of tape of Randall Cobb and said, this is who you should be. You see this explosiveness and intensity in and out of routes, out of the slot. That's what you should look like. And really, since then, he's taken it to a new level and been a big part of this offense, staying the course and winning a couple of games. He's got 15 third down conversion receptions and 21 total third down receptions. That's about 33-ish percent of his total catches. He's been a third down monster for the team, particularly of late without Green in. And I think it's the one thing you go into the next year saying, man, you feel good about the receiver position, even though they lost what they did this past offseason because of the emergence of Boyd and the rest of those young receivers.
So it all comes back, obviously, at some point to Andy Dalton. And I thought Dalton last year before he got hurt was, you know, he's in the MVP conversation. He was playing the best football of his career. The injury was unfortunate for him and for Bengal fans. You know, where do you put Andy Dalton on the NFL quarterback scale when we generally have a sense of who the top four or five guys are, and then there's a big group as to the next 10 guys to be in the top half? Well, where's Andy Dalton?
He's somewhere in that 10. He's in the upper half of this league, I would say. And if you give him the right pieces, he's really good. You know, he probably won't get enough credit for what he did this year. His numbers dipped slightly, but they put so much more on his plate with a new offensive coordinator and an offensive line that couldn't block anybody and a bunch of young receivers trying to figure it out. And then the first half of the season without Tyler Eifert, they really took away everything that Andy Dalton had to make him great at some point this year. And he's still continued to play at a pretty high level. He had a bad stretch during midseason when the Bengals season really went in the tank, where he couldn't really get anything going. He threw too many picks, and it was one of his worst stretches he's had in his career. But if you take that away, he's been the same guy he was last year without all the weapons. So I think there's a thought that you come back next year and you've got to fix a few of those problems that I just discussed, and you have Andy Dalton, you have a quarterback for the next 5 to 10 years that can be in the top half and have a season that can be in the top five if everything's in place correctly for him. And really, when you look at how many teams are in such a bad spot out there, I think you feel pretty good about that.
When you flip over to the defensive side of the football, and you know, we already talked about how surprised I am with the play of the offensive line this year. The same goes with the defensive line, to be quite honest with you, especially against the run. They have Geno Atkins up front, but if you look, at their rushing defense and particularly the stats, really from left tackle to right tackle, they haven't been good against the run this year. Is this just, once again, outside of Atkins, just age taking over there? I mean, they obviously drafted Andrew Billings for a reason, and he's missed the season with his injury. What have you seen that's led to this run defense, in short, not playing well this year?
Well, you're crediting Atkins, and I wouldn't. He's taken a huge step back this year. I think he gets credit because of his past, and he was incredible last year. I thought last year you could have made a pretty good argument for him in the top two or three for defensive player of the year in all of the league. That's the kind of difference maker he was. He has reverted back to what he was the year before this year. He's kind of been just a guy in the middle. The games will go by against backup guards and backup centers, and he has almost no effect. Whereas last year, it was a constant living in the backfield, wrecking game plans week in and week out. He hasn't been that guy, and that filters down throughout the entire defense. Carlos Dunlap has had good games but been inconsistent. Domantas Peko has gotten old. Michael Johnson has quickly gotten old, and they haven't gotten production behind them from young kids like Will Clark, like Marcus Hunt, like a lot of these guys that they drafted in recent years to come in and take the torch. It just hasn't happened there. And Vontaze Burfict missed the first three games and didn't play at the level that they'd expect of him the next about 4 to 5 games. And so he's been unbelievable of late, but you look at the stats and the rushing issues, you put that whole combination together. Ray Maluga also getting old in a hurry. That's what you get. You get them getting run on week in and week out.
Speaking of Burfict, you can't talk about Steelers Bengals without talking about Vontaze. You're very objective. I read your work all the time. But where do you come in on Vontaze Burfict? you know, not only his play defensively, but what, you know, the extracurricular activities and stuff. Does he deserve all this criticism outside of Cincinnati?
He deserves the majority of it. I mean, you know, he's bearing down on $1 million in fines and money lost due to suspension over the course of his career. You earn that. And so it's all legit there for the most part. I think, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about what happened in the playoff game and whether that was a football bang bang play or some sort of malicious thing on Antonio Brown. I tend to think it wasn't malicious, but so much of what Vontaze does is kind of malicious that it's hard not to put it into the same bag. I will just talk about him this year and his growth, which is really what everyone's looking for. The fine thing, when he got $75,000 for stomping on the pile and LeGarrette Blount in New England, I think it was the final straw that got to him. Him, players close to him on the team told us that it has really gotten him to his core, and he's worried about that stuff, and he doesn't want to be the guy playing for free out there. He hasn't had a single personal foul called against him this year. Since then, we haven't seen really anything of the extracurricular stuff. The closest thing being baiting Steve Smith into a personal foul where he took a flop. And that's the type of stuff that you're probably always going to have with Vontaze. But you'll take that over the stuff that is, you know, the angry, malicious stuff that's after the whistle. He's been better at it. And I think there's no way you can look at the way he's played these last 5 weeks and not think that's how the Bengals and the league wants Vontaze to be seen. Great football player who stops when the whistle ends and by all accounts has been, you know, a fair, you know, in all sportsmanship and all that stuff. That will be tested Sunday. Everybody knows that. This is the one that can still light the fire and restart all of that conversation. We will find out. I think this is a big test to find out where he's at with all of that.
Paul, which is the better side of the ball?
The defense right now. I mean, if you're talking today, if you're talking Sunday's game, the defense is far ahead of this offense. The defense was abysmal the first 8 weeks of the season. And the biggest reason the Bengals are essentially right now eliminated from the playoffs, they couldn't do anything. They were falling apart at the seams. And one of the worst runs of defense they've had here since before Mike Zimmer was here. They have figured it out, and since the bye week are only giving up about 16 points a game. They are seem to be back to themselves. The offense continues to be inconsistent, continues to have problems up front, can't run the ball much unless the Browns are on the other side, and that's pretty much where they're at right now. You know, I think
can't run the ball unless the Browns are on the other side. That might be the best line of the year.
Yeah, you know, and it's the truest. It's the truest. Jeremy Hill is averaging over 4 yards per carry, but he's only averaged 4 yards per carry three times all season in a single game because all of it's come against the Browns. So it's a good way to make a living, I guess, if you're trying to pad your stats.
Is the secondary the best part of this defense?
I would say they're playing pretty well right now. I would probably say it's the best unit of the three, although Vontaze Burfict, the way he's playing alone right now, might make the linebackers the best. I'm telling you, he's playing unbelievable football. But, you know, Adam Jones and Drake Kirkpatrick have played really well of late. The safeties have seemed to figure some things out. I don't think they're where they want to be there, but you're right. They probably as a whole are probably the best collective unit right now on the team.
How tough was it for the organization to cut Mike Nugent? Obviously, a guy's been around a long time. I mean, you and I both know. I mean, you don't have to watch. You just have to know kickers, and you have to know that it's just a mental thing, right? It goes bad, and you can't get it back. I imagine that wasn't an easy decision to make.
The way the organization feels about Mike Nugent is why it didn't happen 3 weeks ago.
And even then,
I'd make the argument, I can't believe it didn't happen 3 weeks ago. And there's a lot of people inside of the team that wanted it to happen 3 weeks ago. I mean, he missed 12 total kicks this year. I mean, and if you spread it all out, the total points lost, it's about 2.5 points a game. This team, during the stretch that killed them this year, had three losses and a tie by a total of 10 combined points. You can't not see the combination there and how it went a long way to dooming them. You're right. He for so often in his career would have a dip for a few games and then really come back and be great. And they kept waiting for it, and then it just kept not happening, and it kept getting worse. And they finally, I think when they saw Bullock available, they felt like they had a more viable option to step in and have a little bit of confidence in, and that's why they made the move.
So I guess this game is incredibly meaningful for the Steelers. It can have great meaning for the Bengals if they come in and get a win in this one. And Pittsburgh's had such great success in Cincinnati. What do you think?
I have the Steelers. I just, you know, they match up too well with the Bengals to not hand it to them. I mean, we mentioned the run game. And everybody knows what Le'Veon Bell has been doing. I mean, yeah, he's going to come in and he's going to have a huge game. If he doesn't rush for 150, I'd be floored. I think the Bengals would have to pick off Roethlisberger and take advantage of it. And I think that they can and probably will do that at least once or twice. But is that enough if the other team can just run it at will? And the Bengals haven't protected the passer well. And obviously, of late, the Steelers have been so good at getting a quarterback. If they're back there all day disrupting Dalton's rhythm and Dalton doesn't have A.J. Green to counter, it ends up being a long day. So I have 23-17 Steelers. I just think that the matchups are too good for them to lose this one.
Paul, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you making the time. Enjoy the game and look forward to catching up again soon.
Anytime. Have a good one, guys.
All right, Dave, good stuff from Paul. And I guess the interesting thing was to hear kind of I was with you thinking Geno Atkins was having a better season than, you know, somebody who sees him play every week. Kind of agreed with your assessment of the O-line. Sounds like maybe some of the young receivers are coming on a bit. It's a question that I'm sure that for the Steelers here, the goal, as always, will be to make them one-dimensional. Slow down Jeremy Hill early, make them go to Burkhead in the backfield and you try to use him in the passing game and see if they can shut down a non-AJ Green offense. The focus needs to be on the defense. They got to just contain. You talked about AB numbers. And if you can contain a Tyler Eifert to a 5 or 6 catch, 60-yard day, 70-yard day with no touchdowns, that'd probably be pretty effective.
Yeah, Eifert scares you, right? I mean, he should. This is a guy that Steelers didn't have to face the first time around, and he's one of the premier tight ends in the league, especially when you're talking about between the numbers and running vertically. We've seen at times this year, you know, Lawrence Timmons try to run with some of these guys down the middle as well. So it'd be interesting to see. You know where I think they really are hurting, and while not a huge threat, you know, C.J. Uzomah out of Auburn is a guy that has battled some injury this year, and he's on the injury report again this year. You would think the Bengals would like to use, you know, as many two tight end sets as they can against the Steelers would be my thinking on it. Whether or not Uzomah plays is going to be a different story here. Now, they do have, you mentioned Burkhead earlier in the podcast. He has 9 receptions for 77 yards on the season to go along with 28 carries for 151 yards. But yeah, I mean, typical, I think if you hooked Keith Butler up to a lie detector test, he'd tell you, let's stop the run on early downs and get them in manageable second and third down situations there where you can kind of release the dogs after him. And it was interesting to hear Butler. Did you hear what Butler had to say during his press conference on Thursday, David?
You mean on Coordinator's Corner?
No. After that, with the media.
His scrum? No, I did not hear his scrum.
Yeah, he goes on to say he was asked about what is, you know, first of all, I guess we should kind of frame this. The defense has recorded 18 sacks since week 11. That's the most in the NFL in the last 4 weeks. And Butler was asked, you know, what does he kind of attribute the better pass rush to? And first of all, he starts with, I think Bud Dupree's a good freaking player, Butler said. He also likes Sean Davis. He's coming off the edge, blitzes and stuff like that. He's done a good job for us, so that helps. We started the game off with blitzes this past time, and it was productive for us. Sometimes you hit on them, sometimes you don't. Butler goes on to say, everybody says that these sacks come in bunches, and they do. He later goes on, he also revealed another potential reason for the recent improvement, and he goes on, he has some numbers in this too. He says, if y'all noticed, and I know you did, the first part of the season, we were in a three-man rush a lot. Oh, yeah, we noticed. So that's part of having some young DBs develop for you. Butler goes on to say, so I think we had to do that early in the season and not worry so much about how much pressure we got on somebody, but that we kept people low enough that we would win games. Interesting take there from Butler. So does this mean Butler has more confidence in his younger defensive backs? He goes on to say, well, they have more confidence in themselves too, and that matters more than I have confidence in them. So they have confidence in doing what they're doing, yada, yada. He goes on to praise Artie Burns, Ross Cockrell, saying, you know, both of those guys have gone up and tried to get on AB and cover him as much as they can in practice. And when you do that and you go against one of the best receivers in the league every day and every other day, you're bound to get better and not get discouraged and continue to compete. I think that's what Artie's done. He's continued to compete. He's only going to get better, him and Ross both, I think.
All makes sense to me. You know, the young guys have played well, and they all have contributed in a big way down the stretch here, and certainly the thing, you know, Keith talked on Thursday in Coordinator's Corner about, you know, all the missed tackles. That was obviously a problem. And he was pissed off about the last two touchdowns. I mean, look, Shazier missed the tackle on the little dump pass to Shady McCoy, and then McCoy did his thing. So that's 41. And then Artie makes a mistake. Artie's mistake wasn't going for the interception. Artie's mistake was not knowing time of game and game situation. I mean, okay, he tried to make a play. He didn't make it. But with the score, what it was, you know, 27-7 at the time. Well, I can't remember what the score was. But with the Steelers having a big lead, the only thing you're trying to be sure certain of, and you've just given up 41 yards two plays earlier, the thing you're trying to be certain of is you don't give up a big play. And obviously that's what he did. So that was just an understanding your situation type of thing. You know, he's being aggressive trying to make a play, but you can't be wrong there.
Right, and Butler referenced that in Coordinator's Corner with Missy Matthews. We missed the interception. The guy caught the ball, then we have two guys on him, and we knock each other off him, and he walks in for a touchdown, Butler said. We've got to do better than that. We've got to make those plays when we have the opportunity to do it. Not so much that they gave up the completion there, but as you said, a double explosive play, right? And not only that, a double explosive play for a touchdown. So two double taboos when it comes to Keith Butler. He was upset about that. He was upset about, even though it really didn't make a difference, was that 20-yard gain by the backup running back of the Bills right before the end of the half. And if you go back and look at the tape there, and Butler doesn't name names, but he says somebody was out of their gap, and not hard to figure out who that was. It was Ryan Shazier on that one. And Butler also went on to say, we missed 17 tackles in that game as well. So let me ask you this, David, and we forgot to kind of cover this, or I did, talking about how the Steelers will defend the Bengals. Do you even contemplate putting a guy like Justin Gilbert out there for 8 or 9 plays, similar to the game against the Chiefs, as a matchup on Tyler Eifert? Do you play around?
If he's doing his work in practice and looks good doing it, hell yeah. I'd rather have him there than William Gay. Just, you know, Gay's competent, but wouldn't you rather have the guy who's 4 inches taller? I guess is with a huge caveat. Now the flip side of that is, we just haven't seen him, so it's just hard to get a read on where he is.
Give me a look into your crystal ball that you have there. Give me a percent chance that we see Justin Gilbert, you know, non-injury related, into this game and play, let's say, 5 snaps.
20%.
20? Okay. Would you take the over or under of that?
Yeah, I mean, I might take over because maybe it's 25, but – I don't Nothing is, and then, you know, I'll, on my show this afternoon, I'll have Mark, and he gives some insights in what he sees in practice about playing time, which is generally on. And, you know, I'll ask him if they saw, you know, Gilbert in action. But, yeah, we'll see.
Would it surprise you to see that?
Yeah, it would surprise me a little bit, but not in a negative way. Just I haven't heard about it. We haven't seen him play much lately, so that's the only reason. But if he's, you know, if he's getting good reps in practice and things are going well, you know, I'm all for it. And here's another question for you, just on that front, before we get to our picks, is how much are we going to see you? Is Justin Gilbert going to be a guy who plays next year?
Boy, as it looks right now, they sure seem happy with Ross Cockrell and obviously Artie Burns.
I wasn't even thinking that, because I think we know who the corners are for the next couple of years for now. And you figure Sanquist is William Gain going to be on the team next year?
Here's the thing. I'll counter your question with a question. Has William Gay hasn't played bad this year, has he?
No, he hasn't played badly. No.
So I think you keep Gay and.
And Gilbert's getting paid either way, so you're not saving the $2 million.
Yeah.
And you get a whole year to work with him. I mean, you get to, you know, that's the positive. I mean, you got to remember he came in with no training camp with the Steelers, so you get a year to work with him.
I don't think you dump Gay. I'll put it to you that way.
Okay, fair enough. And so again, you look at who the Steelers you know who the Steelers five corners are on the roster next year, assuming everybody's healthy. It's those four and Senquez Golson. You've got your five corners. They're done. It's done.
Yeah, boy, you just hope Golson can give you anything right now. I mean, all these initial mock drafts coming out, few of them have Steelers taking a corner maybe in the first two rounds. I just don't see that.
They're not. That's crazy, and I've seen it too, and I wrote about it. And they're not taking it. They're not taking a defensive back in the first three rounds. I just cannot see it. Now, look, you can always play the value game, but I can't see it because you've got three. If you want to count Jordan Dangerfield, you got four safeties that you know it's Mitchell and Davis. You're starting safeties the next 2 years. Period. Full stop. End of story. And then, you know, Golden is competent, and Dangerfield's shown that he can be competent. They both got experience. So now you've got nine defensive backs. You know, you lost Shabazz, and Shamarco, maybe you bring him back as a special teams guy on the cheap. Those could be your 10 defensive backs right there. I mean, if there's a spot open, there's a spot for a special team safety. That's it. You're done.
Yeah, maybe you draft a safety round five or six or something, right? Someone you can put on the practice squad, maybe develop, you know, and obviously get you one or two as an undrafted free agent to see if any special teams ability there. But, right now as we sit here in middle of December, I want four outside linebackers in the first four rounds, David. And when you look at kind of the things,
give me a D lineman in there too. So just, you know, a couple edge rushers and a D lineman.
Yeah, maybe a defensive lineman in the first four rounds, maybe. Give me some edge guys, man. Give me edge guys and potentially an inside guy too. And maybe we should throw inside guy as a possibility in those first four picks, because, you know, you need another guy like Shazier that can play the run, right?
Well, you find another guy like Shazier, you hit the lottery. So
right, someone that can do that for you. So I don't think you can rule that out. But boy, give me edge. I'll be banging the table for nothing but edge early on. And you look at this offensive line right now, and the way they got people locked up, and you got the kid out of LSU that was on IR this year that you'll hopefully be able to contribute, and Finney and everything. You know, Hubbard. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, you're set at offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, if you drafted anybody, you draft one in the seventh round or something like that, just to stash on the practice squad there. So defense, edge.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure that somewhere along the way you'll see a running back and wide receiver, and it's just, you know, wide receiver could be high depending on, you know, what they think of Coates, because, you know, Wheaton we would expect to be gone, as we talked on Wednesday. Who knows with Martavis Bryant? So wide receiver could be on offense. A quarterback and a running back somewhere in the draft with D'Angelo Williams not under contract. So, We'll get into all that. And hey, the mortgage process sometimes can be challenging. As challenging as spelling, as challenging as playing against his own defense on the road for Ben Roethlisberger. How about that? Let our buddy Craig Oxane be your guide through the sometime daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Cincinnati. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxane a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve your dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today, 855-961-7763, 855-961-7763, or email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com. Apply online, www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And I really do hope some of you are taking advantage of the opportunity to shop and compare and give Craig a call, because he's been sponsoring, he's been with us now for most of the football season. And as we move into spring and these things, people get into kind of decisions about moving or trying a different location. It certainly wouldn't hurt to give him a call or send him an email.
And before we roll through our picks real quick, Darius Hayward Bay ruled as out. Shamarco Thomas ruled as out on the Friday injury report. That looks like the only two names. I'm not seeing the name of D'Angelo right now. We'll have to wait and see what it says up on the site and all like that. So we'll wait and see that where it goes with that. As far as the Bengals go, Wallace Gilberry, who hasn't practiced this week, is doubtful, as is AJ Green with that hamstring. So with that, let's roll through those picks, David.
All right, let's. We both got a victory last night in a game that was, my God, the two offensive lines of those teams. You can't pick Seattle to go to the Super Bowl with that offensive line. I mean, it's bad. And I'll tell you, the first chance for me to get any kind of extensive look at Jared Goff was not very impressive. He was under pressure the whole game, so I'll give him a bit of a pass on that, but did not very good footwork. Some terrible, terrible throws. Missed an easy touchdown. Just wasn't very good. So wasn't a very good game as expected. So things start off Saturday night. Now Miami goes to the Jets. Dave, Miami -2.5. My man Matt Moore. I'm backing Matt Moore -2.5.
Yeah, hard. I mean, this Jets team right now, especially offensively, what a mess on that. So I'll jump on Moore minus the points.
Tampa Bay to Dallas. I have to tell you, I am surprised that this line is where it is. I thought this would be kind of 4. It opened at 9. I guess it's down to 7. So give me Tampa +7 on the road. They're playing good football. And, Dallas is obviously a good team, but I don't see this being a blowout.
Boy, I read a piece on the Buccaneers defense this past week.
Yeah, on Deadspin.
This past week as well, too. I can't buy. I think Dallas is just going to be too strong in this one. I think they're trying to bait us in here. Give me Dallas to cover this and win it by 10 at home.
The next one's a huge game. Detroit at the Giants. Detroit's getting 4. So I put on Twitter last night, Dave, I said, here are my 5 MVP candidates. Who did I leave out? And I had Brady. I had Matt Ryan. And then I said, maybe Aaron Rodgers, if he finishes like he's playing now. And I said, Zeke. And maybe Le'Veon Bell, if he finishes like he's playing now. And the consensus was the two names that people thought I left out were Stafford, which I will give the nod to, and Derek Carr, which I will not give the nod to. Minnesota, the Lions have 3 hard games down the stretch here. I'm rooting for Matt Stafford. We'll see if he gets it done. Eli's been brutal, so I'm going to take the Lions +4.
If this game was played in Detroit, I'd be all over Detroit on this one. Being as how it's played in New York, I got a feeling Eli rebounds. I just think the Giants are going to be too much in this. I think it'll be close up until late. Maybe the Giants get an extra field goal to cover this one. Give me Giants to cover at home.
Did I leave anybody out in the MVP discussion in your mind?
I think you hit them.
Okay, Eagles +5.5 in Baltimore. Let's take the Eagles, see if they can get it right for a week.
What was the stat? No. No rookie quarterback has won in Baltimore since, I don't remember how long.
The Eisenhower administration.
That Baltimore defense is just going to be too tough. And I think Sproles is out for this game as well, too. A big blast for the Eagles. Give me Baltimore to cover this one at home, David.
Matt Barkley's made himself some money playing really well the past 3 weeks for the Bears, which is a bit of a surprise. I don't know that anybody saw that coming. But Green Bay's got it going. So they're getting six. They're giving six on the road. I'll take the pack.
Yeah, I'll take the pack to cover this one as well.
I don't know what to do with the next one. Vikes -4 against the Colts. Give me the Vikings.
Yeah, I this one screams stay away when you talk to the man this weekend. give me this one, boy, in Minnesota, too. What's that weather going to be like?
They're indoors, right? Aren't they indoors? The thing they got?
Oh, I'm sorry. That is in the dome now. I keep thinking back to that last year, to that playoff game. Give me Indy on the road to win this one outright.
Cleveland gets 10 in Buffalo. I'll take the Browns.
Oh, wow. Yeah, give me – I don't know why. Give me the Browns plus those points on the road.
Another really interesting game. This will be a fun one to watch. Titans getting 5 in Kansas City. Titans got a really good win last week against Denver, even though Mariota didn't do, they just ran the ball the whole game. I think they'll try to do the same. I think this game would be close, so I'm going to take the 5 points.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm going to take KC to get after Mariota in this game. That playing in Kansas City is a tough environment. Give me Kansas City to cover at home.
Texans -5 against the Jags. I'll take the Texans.
Something makes me want to take Jacksonville in this game. I don't know why. How brutal would it be for Houston to lose at home to the Jaguars? Yeah, it's unlikely to happen. I don't know. Give me Jacksonville plus the points.
Okay, Saints +3 at Arizona. Man, Drew Brees, you'd never see back-to-back games like he's had after I was just singing his praises like crazy. I'll take the Cardinals -3.
I'll take the Cardinals -3 as well, too. Boy, what a disappointment Arizona's been this year, right? Is Arians going to stay another year?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'm more worried about health concerns, you know, than I am, you know, him losing his job for other reasons. Give me Arizona. Give me Arizona to cover.
Falcons -13 against San Fran. I'll take Atlanta.
Yeah, I'll take Atlanta too.
New England goes to Denver. New England -3. Give me New England. Trevor Siemian's not the problem, but they got problems.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much New England uses Michael Floyd, if at all, in this game after claiming him off waivers this past week. They didn't look like they missed Gronk too terribly bad so far. Denver, the question is. Can they put up points? And I don't think they can. They should be able to get after Tom Brady, but will that be enough? Give me New England to cover on the road.
Oakland -3 in San Diego. I'll begrudgingly take the Raiders.
I'm going to take an upset here. Give me San Diego to cover this, or to cover and win outright.
Carolina goes on the road Monday night to take on Washington, and that. Just because they haven't done anything good all year. I don't know. Keekly's not playing. Actually, I'm not. It's about 6.5. Give me Carolina. What the hell? I don't know who to tell.
Give me Kirk Cousins at home. Be able to move them sticks on third down and convert in the red zone. So give me Washington to cover at home.
That Tampa-Dallas game got flexed into the 8:30. I don't know the last time that I got to watch Tampa on a nationally televised game. I imagine it has been a long time. So I'll look forward to that one Sunday night. Steelers-Bengals, Dave. The Steelers won a game where I didn't pick 30-20 last week, so I'm going to kind of stick with that formula. Steelers win this game. Ben plays a little bit better. They're able to control Cincinnati in the run game and kind of win this one more comfortably than I would ever imagine. So I'm going to go kind of against what my gut's telling me and say the Steelers 26-14.
Wow. I think it's going to be a lot closer, quite honestly. I worry about Roethlisberger throwing some balls that he probably shouldn't in this one. Obviously, if he doesn't turn the football over, I think the Steelers can have a can very well have a score similar to what you said. I don't think that happens. I'm going to be negative Nancy on this one. I'll predict the Steelers win, but I'll go 23-22 on a last-minute field goal by Boswell in this one.
Okay. Well, we've run a little bit long here, but that all sounds good. And yeah, I'll be doing the post game show with Charlie from 4 to 7, basically immediately following the game on Sunday. And we'll be back with you on Monday.
Yeah, if you listen to this, look for the 5-question thread tonight on Steelers Depot as well too. Keep me entertained. And the Kevin Green Football Life is tonight as well too. Don't miss that on NFL Network. That looks like it's going to be another good one. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com if you want to donate. The holiday season, SteelersDepot.com. Find that PayPal donate button upper right navigational bar. Have a great weekend, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.